Ayarata Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Abhihari. Haya Gopi Janavallabha Girivaratari. Jaya Gopi Janavallabha Girivaratari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Amunatira Banachari. Amunatira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi, Haribol, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we'll be reading Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 17. The chapter is entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. So we'll chant responsively. Bhumi Dripta Arpa Vyajam Dajyanika Satayutai Akranta Bhuri Bharena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao Bhumi Dripta Arpa Vyajam Dajyanika Shatayutai Akranta Bhuri Bharena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao Bhumi Dripta Nirpa Vyajam Dajyanika Satayutai Akranta Bhuri Bharenam Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao. Please chant. Bhumi Dripta Nirpa Vyajam Dajyanika Shatayutai Akranta Bhuri Bharena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao Bhumi Dripta Pavyajam Dajanika Shatayutai Akranta Buri Barena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao Bhumi Jipta Nirpavyaja Dajyanika Satayutai Kranta Puri Parena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao Bhumi Jipta Nirpavyaja Dajyanika Satayutai Akranta Buri Barena Brahmanam Sharanam Yayao. The word for the word for word. Bhumi, Mother Earth. Dripta, puffed up. Nirpavirijaya, posing as kings of the supreme power, personified in the state. Daitya, of demons. Anika, of military phalanxes, of soldiers. Sata Ayutai, unlimitedly, by many hundreds of thousands. Akranta, being overburdened. Buri Barena, by burden of unnecessary fighting power. Brahmanam, unto Lord Brahma. Sharanam, to take shelter. Yayao, went. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Once, when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. Purport. When the world is overburdened by unnecessary military arrangements and when various demoniac kings are the executive heads of state, this burden causes the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:7, Yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bhavata adhutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam trajami aham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I appear myself. When the residents of this earth become atheistic and godless, they descend to the status of animals like dogs and hogs, and thus their only business is to bark amongst themselves. This is dharmasya glani, deviation from the goal of life. Human life is meant for attaining the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, but when people are godless and the presidents or kings are unnecessarily puffed up with military power, their business is to fight and increase the military strength of their different states. Nowadays, therefore, it appears that every state is busy manufacturing atomic weapons to prepare for a third world war. Such preparations are certainly unnecessary. They reflect the false pride of the heads of state. The real business of a chief executive is to see to the happiness of the mass of people by training them in Krishna consciousness in different divisions of life. Chatur Varnya Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasraha, Bhagavad Gita 4:13. A leader should train the people as brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and sudras, and engage them in various occupational duties, thus helping them progress towards Krishna consciousness. Instead, however, rogues and thieves in the guise of protectors arrange for a voting system, and in the name of democracy, they come to power by hook or crook and exploit the citizens. Even long, long ago, asuras, persons devoid of God consciousness, became the heads of state. And now this is happening again. The various states of the world are preoccupied with arranging for military strength. Sometimes they spend 65% of the government's revenue for this purpose. But why should people's hard-earned money be spent in this way? Because of the present world situation, Krishna has descended in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is quite natural, for without the Krishna consciousness movement, the world cannot be peaceful and happy. Om Gyanatimarandasya, Gyananjana Shlakaya, Chakshurun Militam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Rom Padaswami Iti Namine. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Navishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatrubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnebhyo namo namaha. So it's interesting that immediately Srila Prabhupada states that there's a cause for the personal appearance of the Supreme Lord. So the burden upon the earth of unnecessary military formations, so be these formations in the form of deep ranks with shields overlapping and spears joined together, or be it a military formation where the soldiers are armed with bombs and rifles, as arranged by the heads of state. Srila Prabhupada terms these kinds of arrangements as demoniac. And the particular impetus for Lord Krishna, his personal appearance, is the inauspicious qualities of the rulers. So those rulers may be kings, meaning that they're coming from a royal lineage, or merely heads of state that are there to execute a particular vision. So those qualities that are the impetus for Lord Krishna to appear are listed. The first is pride. So the head of state, so these are qualities that the heads of state will be possessing that are the problematic qualities. So the first one is the head of state may be possessing pride, meaning that there may be some arrogance in possessing wealth. Then the other quality that may be there is a desire to be worshipped by others. So these are deemed as extremely undesirable qualities in the person who's acting as the head of state, you know, be it somebody in a royal lineage or merely a president, an executive head. There may be harshness. So that is seen in speaking in a way that's really offensive to others. To persons' minds and ears, because there's usually anger that is fused into the words. And there's also the quality of ignorance that it may be shown by leaders, meaning there's a lack of knowledge as to what should be done or what shouldn't be done. So the most prominent quality, however, is that of acting whimsically according to their own desires. Or in other words, they don't recognize any higher authority to themselves or separate from themselves. So these qualities are listed by Lord Krishna as definitively belonging to those that are of a cruel or demoniac nature. So I'm alluding to these qualities because of Srila Prabhupada specifically referring to military arrangements as being demoniac and as being arranged by the heads of state. So I'm looking at the qualities that are within those heads of state that are then being visibly manifest in these kind of, as Srila Prabhupada terms, the demoniac arrangements. So this listing of these qualities is given by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 16.4, where he says, pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. Now, the significance of the king's position or the head of state's position lies in his ruling according to authoritative teachings. That's what his position entails. So the purpose of his ruling lies in his executing those teachings. So the rule has to be based on knowledge. Now the problem, in contrasting that particular prerequisite for a ruler, is seen in the case of cruel kings or cruel executive heads, because they're acting according to their own idle or passing notions or desires. So this is quite different from saintly kings who were receiving through disciplic succession the knowledge of self-realization and ruling the citizens in order to protect them, particularly to protect them from enslavement to materialism with its concomitant desire to gratify the senses, meaning feeding lust. So the obligation of heads of state, and this applies to any planet in the universe, is to impart to all citizens through education, culture, and devotion the lesson that human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge. So this is a generalization which is very much propounded here by Srila Prabhupada, since it's the prominent teaching throughout the Vedas. So this is the lesson they're meant to be imparting, that human life is meant for the cultivation of spiritual knowledge in an eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in the former case, talking about those cruel kings that are just having their idle notions and desires that are passing and constantly changing, there's an example that I immediately came to my mind. You know, because I grew up on the what was referred to as the dark continent of Africa, throughout growing up, I was very conscious of the particular darkness that pervades that continent, and the darkness lies in the very horrific dictators that emerged in many of the neighboring countries. So an immediate example came to my mind because I used to always be filled with horror reading about one particular dictator whose name was Idi Amin. He used to rule Uganda. So this was a military officer, the head of state, and he was famous not for protecting the citizens, but for killing them. So, in fact, it was calculated that he killed 500,000 citizens. And here's a quote from this military dictator. In any country, there must be people who have to die. They are the sacrifice any nation has to make to achieve law and order. So one immediately gets a picture of that's so contrary to what the Vedas are proposing is necessary, or the necessary outlook for a head of state. And just to further illustrate the horror of, you know, such a cruel head of state, some of those idle and passing desires is illustrated through the dealings he had. And he had five wives and 30-odd mistresses, but his dealings with his wives. Now, his first three wives, one was a dancer, one was the daughter of a clergyman, and one came from a neighboring country with which there was a war, Tanzania. And at some point, already he'd taken on two more wives, he issued papers of divorce to the three wives. And then, if that wasn't adequate, he actually led them to suffer the most horrific ends to their lives. So the first had her car rammed into by his bodyguards. The other had her body dismembered. And the third one was left to fend for herself. So this is some of this illustration of the cruelty of heads of state that are just going with their passing notions and desires. So this is some of the darkness that at any rate one is conscious of in growing up in a continent that was flavored with these kinds of heads of state. So Srila Prabhupada, he expresses the materialistic view of life. Life is meant, and this is the materialistic view, being used for its maximum duration, so to the utmost, it has to be used for these purposes: eating, drinking, sexual intercourse, making merry, and enjoying life. That is the materialistic view of how life should be used. and in fact, we find from this military dictator, Idi Amin, that I'm using as an example, at least that I was very conscious of in my life, he was often engaged in stealing gold from neighboring countries, and particularly Tanzania. And one can see by just the number of wives and mistresses he had, something of this concept being held of what life is meant for. And on the side, instead of protecting the citizens, there's slaughtering of the citizens. So this kind of functioning is based on the premise that there's no life after death. So the emphasis gets put on getting the maximum comforts in the present life. So Srila Prabhupada, he puts it very succinctly. So I'm going to quote Srila Prabhupada. This ignorance about the eternity of the living being and the change of covering in the material world has played havoc in the structure of modern human society. And I thought it was just so relevant. This quote comes from the second canto in the third chapter in the 18th verse in a purport. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he states that the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is spoken to the sun god Vivashvan. So because we're discussing how the important basis for rule has to do with the transmission of spiritual knowledge, education, culture, and devotion. That's how the citizens are supposed to be trained. So this Bhagavad Gita was spoken to the sun god Vivishwan 120,400,000 years ago. And it was spoken to Vivishwan because he was just such a military leader, a kshatriya. And in fact, he's seen as the father of all kshatriyas. These descendants of the sun god, we went through a whole section in the Srimad Bhagavatam recently in our readings, and the Surya Vamsa Kshatriyas. So there was a careful listing of who was the descendant, who was the next descendant, who was the next descendant. So in that reading of the Kshatriya lineage, we read that Vaivashvata Manu, and here, and it's a post, this Vaivashvata Manu, it's a post, it was held by Shraddhadeva. And he had worshipped Lord Krishna when he desired sons. And so he begot 10 sons. And one of them was Maharaj Ikshvaku, who was the eldest. So we get that in the 9th canto, in the 2nd chapter. And this is how Shraddhadev, as a kshatriya, is described. So this is the original kshatriya, original military leader. He's described as having conquered his senses. So something of that havoc that's wreaked in society has to do with the senses not being under control. And here we have Shraddhadev. He's just the first description that's how his whole being is described as having conquered his senses. And he begot 10 sons in the womb of his wife Shraddha. And this is the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto, in the 2nd chapter, the 4th verse. The names of those sons were Ikshvaku, Dishta, Drishta, Karushaka, Narishyanta, Prasadra, Nabaga, and Kavi. So we can see how there's that different kind of description that's coming in the Vedas. The emphasis is on the personality with the controlled senses, and then the subsequent excellent progeny that he produces, as opposed to the cruel demoniac heads of state that are even in their personal lives killing those that, you know, would be the bearers of the good progeny. So such a contrast. So these Vedic instructions of Lord Krishna, speaking in the Bhagavad Gita, is that education that has to be imparted to the citizens. And that education is accepted through the disciplic succession. Just as the sun god spoke to his son Manu, so also Manu then speaks to his son Ikshvaku. And we get this described in Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam iman rajasho vidhu sakala neha mahata yogo nasta parantapa. It's in 4.2 Bhagavad Gita. So the supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam that we're on right now, there's narration, and it's coming up, a narration of Lord Krishna's personal pastimes. So, all the topics of discussion are transcendental knowledge. And that knowledge, which is what is supposed to be, how citizens are supposed to be trained, is perfectly defined by Sukadev Goswami. So this is Sukadev Goswami defining transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachments, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? So that's that definition by Sukadeva Goswami of transcendental knowledge is given in Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 12. So this only means of God realization, of approaching God, is what's called Kaivalya Panta. It is also the only means for attaining Godhead, transcendental knowledge. So it's the only means for attaining Godhead. Now, this means of God realization that's proposed as the training, the necessary education that heads of state, be they royals or be they executives, it has to be done through Shravanam, so the hearing of those topics related to the personality of Godhead. That's the education. So one imagines television stations and, radios. I mean, we have, one educational channel on the radio that attempts to look at more in-depth at things. So I guess those would be means of this kind of transmission of topics related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it seems perfectly possible in this particular time. So the consequence of this hearing, this Harikatha, is that achievement of transcendental knowledge. So that's all that's required, is allowing people to hear about the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one usually thinks of how much one has to study material knowledge. Like sometimes I have this discussion with Subal in terms of education of children. So we have, for instance, children that come for 1 hour once a week to the temple to receive spiritual education. So that's the time at which they are actually getting to hear these topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and look at them very in depth. And what one is up against is that for at least 6 or 7 hours, 5 days in the week, 35 hours of material education. So that is what they're hearing for 35 hours in the week. It's not very good balance. So the reason this, or let's put it this way, this reaching of transcendental knowledge to persons is the cause of becoming disinterested in ordinary topics. So it's very revolutionary and very liberating. So all ordinary social and political activities start to become unattractive. And of course, with further progression in hearing transcendental knowledge, one may even lose, that close attachment one has to one's own body. And the actual result is that one doesn't get shaken up in any way by material ways of being, meaning one's mind stays steady in that transcendental knowledge. And should persons not receive this kind of education, then they become atheistic. And the material covering acts in that they come, this is Srila Prabhupada in this verse, they come to the status of dogs and hogs. So the continued atheism leads to having a covering, an external covering, that's the form then becomes that of a dog or a hog. So you can see the terrible disservice that heads of state are doing to not actually make room for this kind of education to the, for the citizens, that it's actually creating for their citizens that future of being in lower forms of life. And Srila Prabhupada, in this particular purport, he says that that kind of existence where persons are acting atheistically, so there's no consciousness at all of a supreme authority, is that the behavior becomes very argumentative. And one sees this in just in daily life. It takes one thing that displeases somebody slightly and immediately they are argumentative. I have this experience. We're doing some repairs to the apartment that we to reside in, and there's a lady below who has made it her business to constantly demand, you know, timelines for anything that's happening. So she's not residing in the apartment. She's in her own apartment down below. And naturally, it's impossible to give that perfectly because one's not the worker. So the worker does things at their pace and they choose to do this first or that second. You know, there's that freedom. So just not being able to have like an exact date of exactly when something's going to be done. I mean, a broad picture is given to her. The argumentative nature, you know, that lack of awareness of a higher authority and natural order is not there. The person then makes a point to immediately make sure that some fine will get imposed on us because there's a little bit extra noise or something is created. So this is the nature of atheistic society. There's always that argumentative mood. There's no tolerance for others. So because there's no acknowledgement of a supreme authority or a supreme order. Now, turning again to heads of state, the statement made by Srila Prabhupada is that the various states of the world are preoccupied with military strength. So that's what the preoccupation is. It's not education or training of the citizens or being conscious of a higher authority, but rather is a whole preoccupation on military strength. So an example of such a leader in our present time is the North Korean leader who comes from a dynasty of leaders. And his name is Kim Jong-un. So he's already known to have overseen various nuclear tests, dozens of missile tests, and he's known to have very tense, heated exchanges with the United States. So this is illustrating this point that it's a preoccupation with military strength. It's a preoccupation with defending and hence being more than ready to actually have verbal heated discourses with other nations. So exactly as Srila Prabhupada is describing, and this is now about 50 years since this purport was written. So we see it's perfectly exact, the transcendental vision of Srila Prabhupada. Now, not only does this leader, and I'm going into it in depth because it's very much necessary to illustrate when the focus is of different to what the Vedas are proposing. Accompanying this military leader is constant threats of nuclear annihilation. So this is what this leader is doing. He's threatening the world with nuclear annihilation. There's also various attacks that are done on neighboring South Korea. So this is that kind of chief executive head of state. So he's coming in what would be, I guess, a kind of royal lineage for that country. And he's not training his people in God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. And the proper training that's supposed to be provided, again, is for the people in general, is Krishna consciousness in their different divisions of life. So people are naturally encouraged to do those occupations that will allow them to evolve their consciousness, so that their nature is built for, so everybody's correctly placed in society. And via the hearing process, there's progression, there's spiritual evolution. So it means that their senses are getting purified of that lust for materialism, because they've been related to Lord Krishna, the senses are. Now, so this is, of course, quite different from that kind of impurity where the senses are merely being allowed to be gratified on the material level. I mean, one sees it a lot in I guess, Asian countries, this emphasis on materialism because of not proper leadership. So there's almost a kind of obsession with engaging the senses or gratifying the senses in a material kind of way. Now, on a philosophical level, this combination of the Supreme Lord with all his senses and the servitor with the same senses, and I'm putting it that way because the servitor is a relatively small part of the Supreme Whole, but still he's part of the Supreme Whole. So it's an excellent combination for bringing those senses in check. So the instructions imparted in Bhagavad Gita were those where the Supreme Lord has his full senses and Arjuna receiving those instructions has his full senses. And this allowed for that kind of perfect and logical understanding between the disciple and the master. So the exchange of views between the master and the disciple is only possible when the receptor is submissive and real. And this is something of what we've, this prelude to hearing the pastimes of Lord Krishna, it's painting that picture of the very submissive and very real head of state, King Parikshit, who's exchanging views with his spiritual master, Sukadev Goswami. So this kind of exchange that we're witnessing, it's actually only made possible through the process of education via hearing, because it puts one in a different category. This is the one category, and here's the second category of persons, those that are not hearing transcendental knowledge. This is the description, again, from the second canto in the third chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Men are actually categorized already that way because that's their future form. So just not hearing transcendental pastimes, one's already categorized in those lower forms of life. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a very serious thing. And that particular verse from Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 19, I'll read it. Svadbivakad ostra karai samstutaha Pusha Pashu na yat karna patopetsa yatu nama gadat graja. So indeed, this stress on training persons systematically in higher standards of life, in spiritual values, it takes persons away from the level of animals such as dogs, hogs, and camels. So the comparison that's there because of persons that aren't hearing transcendental topics is that why dogs is because a doggish mentality gets developed. They're merely looking for service to a greater master. So often we find Prabhupada talking about universities training persons. So actually, the comparison to the dog is the doggish mentality that gets developed. You know, one's merely looking for a master to serve. So be it this corporation or that corporation, because these days everything's on a bigger scale, but that's the master one serving that corporation. So, and then the hog, the mentality there is that one, through not hearing transcendental topics, and it affects in this kind of way that there isn't discrimination regarding the type of foodstuffs that one should be ingesting as a human. So, I mean, it's so significant, obviously. It sounds like a very simple detail, but it's so significant in terms of consciousness being in the proper space. And the camel, because persons want to enjoy the results of their own actions. Because the camel's supposed to chew thorns that, you know, lead to the tongue becoming bloody, but the camel thinks that that combination of the substance with the liquid is an enjoyable thing. So it's hence that comparison with persons not hearing transcendental knowledge with these three types of creatures. So Srila Jiva Goswami, he takes everything even one step further. And I'm connecting this to this particular verse today where it's Mother Bhumi, Earth herself, in a personified form, who actually goes to Lord Brahma because she's bearing the burden of all these military formations that have been arranged by the heads of state, the kings. In this case, it particularly says demoniac kings. Srila Jiva Goswami connects demigods and humans and the material bodies quite nicely. So he puts it this way, that the controlled embodied soul, the adhyatmika person, at the same time is the adhidaivika person, meaning the controlling demigod. So he's shrinking the gap between demigods and humans. And he puts it that way in the sense that both are in the same category of jiva or spirit soul. So they just differ in the roles that they're playing as controller and controlled. And the third person in the material triad, this is Srila Jiva Goswami, is adhibhautika. Different from the other two is that inert material body with its organs and senses, which is needed for material life. It's a means for enjoyment. And it's also why then the deities have something to rule, because there's a material body existing. So the different role of being a demigod and being a mortal is only possible because of the presence in the world of material bodies. This is Srila Jiva Goswami's breakdown. And above these three material persons, so to speak, in one person, there's three persons, so to speak, is the supreme shelter. So the supreme person fully knows these three entities in material life, and he's the ultimate controller. So the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam is to know and to become attracted to that supreme controller. And here, Bhumi personified, she goes to Vairaja Brahma, living on Mount Meru. This is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And it's also confirmed by Parashara Muni. So that is where she's headed to, Mount Meru, in this particular circumstance. So I've tried to highlight a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's emphasis in this purport. So if there's any thought on this matter, on this topic of discussion. Now, I hope I wasn't too simplistic, but it's how it emerged from the purport.
I appreciate your class a lot. I find it interesting how practical that Srila Prabhupada presents Krishna consciousness and how it can be applied on a big scale in the world. I'm just contemplating, like, how do we even begin to scratch the surface of bringing about this culture, this education, to make a transformation on the planet. Seems like impossible. If you have any thoughts about that.
Well, I suppose because I'm extremely enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness and the far-reaching effects that are so beneficial, just in terms of consciousness evolving so dramatically, it seems to me that the existence of persons that are extremely well trained and extremely thoughtful on the subject matters of the Vedas are the persons that can spread those ideas, because ideas transform society. So I think it was the other day Acharya Nishtha had brought up the presence of one person that has devotional inclinations, been in a governmental position. So it can be like that, and it can also be that friendship is made with those in those kind of positions, so that the brahmanas take those persons that are caring, well-trained, fully conversant with Vedic knowledge, can act in their role as advisors to the heads of state. And that can bring about a huge change. So it's already, if society starts to get ordered properly in terms of its role, and it begins from the Brahminical class of persons. So the Vaishnavas, who are very well versed in Vedic knowledge, being in their position of advice to, of providing advice to heads of state, can certainly bring about a great deal of change. And then one performs the activities that are recommended for the Vaishnavas, which is the public chanting, and that I know you think about a great deal. that hearing has a profound effect, for elevating consciousness, for bringing about the planting of the seed of devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it cannot be underestimated, the power of public chanting, and then of course the other of closer proximity to those that are heads of state. So, and those teachings can also be distributed to the person. So regularly, my spiritual master will send a particular email where a particular head of state has received a Bhagavad Gita or has had contact with one of the spiritual masters in our movement, providing that person with a Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, the process is going on, and the fruit will come because of the concerted effort to spread those ideas and bring the proper understanding. So it's progressive. I wouldn't take a defeatist standpoint at all. Because Krishna is, after all, the supreme controller, and his emphasis is on persons living a life according to religious principles. So that's his preferred state for the world. So because his preference is that way, we have to proceed with what we are advised to do, and the proper order will come. Because he's the supreme controller, and that's what his preference is. So it has to move in that direction. I think Eric.
I want to thank everybody for their association and for their hospitality and for maintaining the mission of Srila Prabhupada here so that people like myself can come here and visit and take part. I want you all to know that I'm going home today. It's been a wonderful stay. Lots of transcendental experiences, and I look forward to seeing you again in the future sometime, and if not here, then in Goloka Vrindavan. thank you again for your association and service. It's a real joy to have such a wonderful family, the family of Srila Prabhupada, and, on this earth. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for coming regularly to this particular outpost of the Krishna Consciousness Movement and coming to render service very happily. So if there isn't anything else.
I'd just like to share something too about kind of what Giridhari said and how you responded. I've had a lot of, I grew up kind of raised in the Catholic faith and have a lot of background with that. And Mother Teresa is someone in that faith, who, and Radhanath Swami has met her and spoken highly of her. But something she said too is like, just people in thinking this world are starving for love, and like, well, there's a quote she said, like, don't wait for leaders, but like change can happen on a small scale, person to person. And we talk about making that big change. I think sometimes, like, I feel the same thing. Like, I feel having a lot of diverse religious experiences, seeing such, like, the divide between different traditions is very, like, disheartening. Just, like, not being able to have that wider, that deeper consciousness and love for everyone. But, yeah, that staying conscious of like the impact that just like the smallest thing can have on one person, and how that change transforms the world, because everything is multiplicative, where then that person experiences the love and it goes forward. I've just also had a lot of experiences in sharing with my brother and seeing how profoundly connected our minds are and everything. And there's actually, if I can share something, there was a scientific study done, I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but it's called like the 100th monkey experiment, where they taught these monkeys on an island to like wash potatoes or something, or do something differently than they normally did. And they had taught, once they taught a certain like threshold of them to do it this way, then like all of the monkeys, even on different islands of that species or whatever, ended up adopting that practice, even without being in communication with the monkeys on this other island. So it was profound. There was something connected between their consciousness. So I think applying that to like our species as well, like there's something, I mean, I can feel like seeing in the world now, there's a mass kind of awakening happening. And I think the turmoil is part of that we see in the world, but I don't know, maybe, you know, as we continue to expand our consciousness and share the love of God and the Supreme Godhead with people, that consciousness will just gradually or kind of hit a threshold where everyone will start to come to greater realization. I don't know. Just thought I'd share that study. That was fascinating to me.
Thank you
Some
very much.
Some thoughts I had. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, thank you very much for that thought of that individual consciousness comes to affect others, in particular where they feel that something of the devotional love that's present within a person, yes, that has far-reaching effects because it's coming from a transcendental plane and material love has no comparison. So indeed, somebody that's carrying devotion in their hearts can touch so many persons, even in 1 minute exchanges. So and that's the beginning of the seed of devotion in their own hearts, having some appreciation for somebody that's carrying devotion. So indeed, it's destined to spread the culture of devotion, certainly destined to spread. Yes, I have a bomb for them.
You mentioned the 120 principle, and you're pointing out that there's that connection. And I saw that. I was in India for 10 years and got back a year ago. Now, 10 years ago, when I was out on the street, if I said karma, yoga, meditation, reincarnation, vegetarianism, people typically 10 years ago, their response to me would be, get the. They wouldn't want to hear anything about that. They'd even get angry or shocked or offended. Now, in only 10 years, I'm getting a different response. People are saying, oh, my niece is into that. Or they say something like, oh, my friend's a vegetarian or a vegan even. So the 100th monkey principle is definitely helping us. But Jitendra pointed out also to me that Prabhupada at one point said that the more we're active and the more books we give out, also the polarity increases and the likelihood that there will be a great war is also increased because the opposing demons become that much more upset. So there's, all these things are, you know, have to be understood. So the impetus for us is to become that much more serious about understanding that we're not the body. Because to the degree I'm convinced I'm this body, then I'll have to be very fearful, afraid all the time.
Sarvabhauma Prabhu, thank you very much for highlighting that particular point where the strength lies in, again, proceeding with a devotional activity that is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Thank you.
I was just going to say, in terms of like the wide scale spreading of Krishna consciousness, my understanding is that Prabhupada emphasized that it won't necessarily happen from the top, like somehow we preach to a president and he becomes a devotee, but rather when the masses reach a certain, as we're saying, like a critical mass, then naturally they'll want to elect a Krishna conscious leader. So it'll be the grassroots, from the public going up, you know, and then we'll choose more enlightened leaders, senators, governors, and then eventually maybe an entire government. And Prabhupada was always, his enthusiasm astounded everyone, you know, and he had that vision actually, because he saw that if the United States became Christian conscious, you'll see when you travel internationally, practically all of the more developing countries, they like worship the United States. They just, whatever goes on there, this is good, we should do it. You see that a lot in Asia and South America and probably Africa. And so that was Prabhupada's hope. You know.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, the idea that the mass of persons, like working from a more grassroots level, that they then will evolve their consciousness to the extent of being able to be more discriminating in the selection of leaders, that certainly applies as well. I wouldn't discount the influence on a leader. Of course, somebody who's already very much materially contaminated obviously has to go through quite a bit of evolution to be able to take to spiritual consciousness. But then again, it's perfectly possible if the person is already of a pious nature, and those persons do exist. I mean, sometimes when one reads of monarchies, like I think I got exposed recently to one of the princes in England giving an interview of, you know, what his thoughts were. And you could see that the person was very conscious of his responsibility to the citizens, like extremely conscious of his responsibility to the citizens. So whether that applies or that kind of view is stronger in those that are in a monarchy versus, you know, elected presidents or elected heads of state, I don't know, that sense of responsibility to the citizens. But that, I would think, would be a very important criterion that should be there to if the change were coming from the top. Yeah. But thank you for looking from the other perspective. Thank you very much. So thank you, everyone, for your kind attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.